Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're looking at something really important, tying directly into recent headlines. We're calling this one In the News. It was actually sparked by a pretty fascinating article, titled Khamenei's Diminished Authority, Iran's New Challenges. Our goal today isn't just, reporting the news. We want to look at the possible ripple effects, the ramifications, but through a very specific viewpoint. We're talking about a prophetic framework drawn from ancient texts. Think of it like connecting today's big stories with what some believe is, a kind of blueprint for tomorrow. We're going to unpack some really striking connections, maybe surprising insights too, and hopefully help you get informed quickly on this unique perspective.
It's definitely a compelling way to view things, isn't it? What's particularly insightful here is how current events, especially the complex situation in Iran, can be seen through this, let's say, particular interpretive lens of biblical prophecy. The analysis we're digging into today follows what's often called a futuristic approach. So this means we're looking at prophecies in books like Daniel, chapters 7 and 11, as things that are still unfolding or maybe haven't even happened yet, directly applicable to now and the near future rather than just, stories about ancient history. It's a perspective that suggests these old writings might actually be commenting directly on modern global stuff, providing a sort of roadmap for what's coming.
Okay, that sets the stage perfectly. So let's dive into the core of this framework. Our main source today, a text called Daniel's Beasts and Kings, a futuristic geopolitical interpretation, really focuses its arguments on Daniel chapter 7. Now, for those listening who might have heard of Daniel but aren't super familiar, can you give us a quick rundown? What is Daniel 7 and why is it so significant here?
Sure. Daniel chapter 7, it describes this really vivid vision. Daniel sees four distinct beasts coming out of a great sea. Now, this interpretation often sees that great sea as symbolizing a multitude of people or like a densely populated area, basically the chaotic world stage. And these beasts, they aren't just, mythical creatures. The text itself says they represent four kingdoms that will rise from the earth. In this futuristic view we're exploring, these aren't historical empires from way back when. They're seen as end times entities, powerful geopolitical forces relevant today. The first beast, it's a lion with eagle's wings. That's identified here as China, representing its rapid rise in global reach. The second is a bear raised up on one side with three ribs in its mouth. That one's identified as Russia, sort of embodying its perceived coldness, ruthlessness, maybe, in its history of expansion.
Right. Okay. And this is where it really starts hitting close to home, connecting with today's world. The third beast. It's described as like a leopard, which had upon its back four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads. And dominion was given to it. So how does our source take that ancient description and map it onto, contemporary geopolitics?
Right.
Especially Iran.
Yeah, this is key. In this interpretation, Iran is the leopard. The leopard's traits, swiftness, agility, cunning, they're seen to align pretty well with Iran's rapid emergence as a major regional player since the 79 revolution. Think about its agile strategies, how it projects influence through proxies, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis. It's quite a parallel, isn't it? Now, the four heads on this leopard, they're interpreted not as four leaders ruling at the same time. No, the idea here is that they represent the successive supreme religious and political leaders in Iran, the Ayatollahs, one after the other.
Successive. That's a really crucial point for understanding the timeline here. So just to make sure we're all grounded, can you briefly explain how the Islamic Republic of Iran actually started? And what exactly is the role of the Ayatollah in that system? It's quite unique.
Of course. So the Islamic Republic of Iran, it came about after the 1979 revolution. That revolution overthrew the monarchy, which had been there for a long time. And it established this unique theocratic system, a government based on religious authority. At the very top is the supreme leader, the Ayatollah. This figure holds ultimate authority, not just political, but also religious authority, and they're deeply intertwined. The Ayatollah sets the country's overall direction, has immense power over the government, the military, everything, and is seen as the spiritual guide. It's a role that's absolutely central to Iran's identity and how it's governed.
Okay, got it. So this idea is four successive Ayatollahs, or the four heads of this prophetic leopard. And this is where our source then brings in Daniel chapter 11. What's Daniel 11 about, and how does it connect this idea of succession with the eventual rise of that fourth beast mentioned in Daniel 7? How do these chapters link up?
It's actually a really interesting connection they make. Daniel 11 is, well, it's much longer, very detailed prophecy, often read historically. But in this futuristic interpretation, Daniel 11 verse 2 specifically mentions four Persian kings. And this verse is seen as the key. It's viewed as providing the basis, the pattern, for understanding those four heads of the leopard in Daniel 7 as a succession of leaders, not ruling all at once.
Ah, I see. So Daniel 7 gives a symbol, Daniel 11 gives the pattern.
Exactly. Think of it like that. Daniel 7 shows the leopard with its heads. Daniel 11.2 hints at how they appear one after another like a relay race. And this perspective then reframes all those intricate details in Daniel 11, verses 2 through 20, the conflicts, the power shifts. It sees them as a prophetic blueprint for the kind of turmoil in geopolitics that will mark the period just before the Antichrist, the fourth beast of Daniel 7, comes onto the scene.
That's a fascinating way to link them. Now, this interpretation mentions historical conflicts, right?
What?
Between powers similar to ancient Greece and Persia. How does that ancient dynamic, these wars and rumors of wars, how does that apply to the end times? And more importantly, how does it set the stage for this Antichrist figure?
Right. The conflicts described in Daniel 11 between powers that are analogous to ancient Persia, which again in this framework is modern Iran and Javan, representing the broader Greek Anatolian region. These are seen as a kind of symbolic preview, a precursor for intense future geopolitical turmoil. This idea of a prolonged period of instability, of wars and rumors of wars you hear about elsewhere in prophecy, that's seen as absolutely crucial because it's this chaos, this constant conflict wearing nations down that creates the perfect conditions, the vacuum for the fourth beast of Daniel 7 to emerge.
The kingdom of the Antichrist.
Precisely. And the Antichrist figure, described in Daniel 11.21 as a vile person who shall come in peaceably and seize the kingdom by intrigue, basically exploits that chaos, exploits the weariness, offers a false peace, a false stability, and uses that deception to grab power. It's quite a chilling picture of how turmoil can lead to tyranny.
And a really critical piece of that puzzle, as the source explains in detail, is identifying Javan. That term might not ring a bell for everyone. So who, in modern terms, fits the bill for Javan and Persia in this framework? And why are these specific countries so important to the whole narrative?
This is where ancient geography meets modern politics, you could say. The Hebrew word Yavan, often translated as Javan, actually points to a broader area than just modern Greece. It includes, according to the source, large areas of the Near East and the Eastern Mediterranean. And crucially, it specifically includes Anatolia.
Which is modern Turkey.
Exactly, modern Turkey. And identifying Turkey as Javan is absolutely vital here because it positions Turkey as a central player in these end times events. And if you think about Turkey, Anatolia, its historical and even spiritual significance is huge. All seven churches from the Book of Revelation were located there, for instance. It underscores this enduring role. So just to be clear, in this prophetic context, we're looking at modern Iran as the latter-day Persia and modern Turkey as the latter-day Javan. The dynamic between them becomes a key thing to watch.
Okay, now let's bring this all back to that news article that kicked off our deep dive, the one about Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Published June 27th, 2025, it talks about his diminished authority, new challenges. How does his current situation, as reported, fit into this prophetic progression of Iranian leaders you've outlined?
Well, the article paints a very telling picture, doesn't it? It says Khamenei, even though he reappeared after the recent conflict with Israel, seemed frail and weak, spoke softly and hoarsely. A far cry, it says, from the powerful speaker people remember.
Yeah.
He was even seen in a video address against just a plain backdrop, which is apparently unusual for him. And there were reports, suggestions, he might have been in hiding, possibly even avoiding phones and computers for fear of assassination. The article points out he's 86, he has that paralyzed right arm from an old assassination attempt back in 81, and he's faced major setbacks recently. Problems with pro-Tehran militant groups, the fall of Assad in Syria. These are big blows. Analysts quoted in the piece describe him as diminished, someone who's lost credibility, bears responsibility for major losses. And while they say his position seems secure for now, the article stresses that the battle for his succession will only intensify. It's not just about his health, it's about the future direction.
That paints a very clear picture of a leader under pressure facing significant challenges. So if Khamenei is the current Ayatollah in this succession, where does that put us on this prophetic timeline? And what might this framework suggest could happen after he's gone, especially with this intensifying succession battle?
Well, if you trace it back, the Islamic Republic starts in 79. Ruhollah Khomeini was the first supreme leader. Ali Khamenei as a second. Since this interpretation sees the four heads of the leopard as successive leaders, it means we're currently, well, under the second head, according to this view. We're still progressing along that timeline. So his increasing frailty, the talk of succession becoming more intense, that's seen as highly significant. It points towards potential shifts, maybe even dramatic ones, in Iran's path. The expectation within this framework is that the next leader, the third Ayatollah in this line, might actually be the one to change Iran's course in a really fundamental way.
Okay, and this connects perfectly to another source we looked at, that article titled U.S. Overtures to Iran, Nuclear Deal Prospects. It mentions recent efforts, proposals to get Iran back to the table on the nuclear issue. Could a new leader, maybe less entrenched, facing all these domestic pressures, could they actually be swayed by offers like these? Could that be the change in course?
Precisely. That U.S. Overtures article, also dated June 27, 2025, it details some pretty significant proposals from the U.S. Trump administration to restart talks. We're not talking small things here. It mentions a possible $20-30 billion investment in civilian nuclear infrastructure, provided it's non-enrichment.
Wow, that's substantial.
Yeah, plus major sanctions relief, access to about $6 billion in Iranian funds currently frozen overseas. There was even an idea floated about rebuilding the Fordo nuclear site, which, remember, was recently hit by U.S. bombs, but rebuilding it as a non-enriching civilian facility. Now, the big condition from the U.S. side is, and always has been, zero Iranian uranium enrichment.
Which Tehran has always rejected.
Consistently rejected it in the past, yes. But a new leader, someone maybe less bound by the past, facing a serious economic crisis, maybe popular discontent, such offers might suddenly look a lot more appealing. It could be a major turning point, a very different direction for Iran than we've seen for decades. It's definitely a scenario this framework is watching very, very closely.
Right. This brings us to the sort of the bottom line of our deep dive today. So what does all this mean for you listening right now, especially looking through this specific futurist lens of the end times? What should we really be keeping an eye on in the coming months, maybe years?
Well, connecting it all back to that bigger picture, the really profound implication in this framework is this. It suggests the fourth Ayatollah in the succession counting from Khomeini in 79 will be the leader who really kicks off the specific events described back in Daniel 11.
The period of intense turmoil leading to the Antichrist.
Exactly, that period of prolonged, intense geopolitical chaos. So from this perspective, watching the leadership transitions in Iran becomes incredibly important. It's not just regional politics, it's potentially a marker on this prophetic timeline. And furthermore, remember Turkey's identification as Jaivan, its significant role as Persia's counterpart. We're encouraged by this view to watch both Iran and Turkey very closely. They're seen as the key bellwethers, the indicators of how close we might be to these end times events. That continuous state of unrest, the wars and rumors of wars involving powers like Russia, the King of the North in this view, Egypt, King of the South, and definitely Iran and Turkey. It's all seen as systematically wearing down nations, creating those exact conditions for a deceptive figure, the Antichrist, to rise and seize power by offering a false solution. That's really the crucial takeaway if you're looking through this particular lens. The Middle East isn't just, you know, a troubled region. It could be the stage for truly pivotal global shifts.
So what stands out to you from all this? It really does make you think about that deep connection between today's headlines and these ancient writings, doesn't it? If this futurist interpretation has merit, then what happens next in the Middle East, especially with Iran's leadership and the whole Iran-Turkey dynamic? Well, it could be much more than just news. It suggests we might be watching a really complex story unfold, maybe even a prophetic blueprint playing out right now. It's a perspective that certainly gives us a lot to think about until our next deep dive.